and welcome to Marooned at MacBite's headquarters, day 244. And I'm here, all alone. Yes, Lola's taken Mike out for a walk. I would say it was the other way around, but I can assure you it wasn't. Hello, Simon. Yes, you were just on your own. Clap for carers. That seems like another lifetime. It does. Hello, Paul. Who else have we got in here? It was Captain Tom's birthday on the 30th of April. We've been marooned. That's where it's gone. Oh, it's scary. It is. It's scary. Yeah, for me, it's like the summer never happened, despite the fact it was rather warm. Apart from that, it was just the summer was basically waiting for the second wave, which we're now enjoying. Lovely. So, how is everybody? I have had a better 24 hours than the last one. Oh, I have a tech tale of woe. I did mention this last night, didn't I? That everything was hanging by a thread. You had no idea, guys, how much of a thread. So today's been very interesting. Jonathan, what happened to you? Not off. It all get too much. But I did see in Slack, not seen all of Slack yet, but just saw a notification fly past saying that baseline grids have just changed your life. So, not all bad then, even though you slept through it. You slept through your life-changing experience. Ah, what happened? Oh, when did it start? Right, Tuesday. Tuesday, we got information about the Macs. And I, before the event, was thinking if there was a Mac Mini, I'd buy one. The reason that I didn't buy one, and that there is not one on the way, is I'm a bit dubious about the RAM. It was all the talk between the sheets. And you just thought crawling to bed would be a good idea. So it was back to the drawing board on Tuesday. But at least Mike and I knew that we were nowhere near an iMac. So the original plan then kicked in, which would be, let's look at an iMac. Me move the iMac I've got onto my second desk because there's so many configurations and settings on it and stuff and activated software. You know, it, reinstalling, it does take a while to get it just the way it should be. So that was the original plan. But then on Tuesday, it was like, these chips, not at all sure. So maybe Mike and I, to carry on doing what we're doing, the way we're doing it, maybe we need one each. And that was where we were, right? And you might think this is really weird because why would you buy an older machine? And I would have been like that at one point. But I also have a bee in my bonnet about this. Let's teach every child to code. No, let's not. Because just like not every child should be a brain surgeon, not every child should be a coder. Because there's more to coding than just coding. Any idiot can code. You need something else to be a good coder, like a brain surgeon. So I've been saying to Mike that the software has been getting worse and worse. As coders get younger, you know, like policemen, it's been getting worse and worse. So picture the scene. We're pondering that and we're thinking to try and get the delivery date the first week in December or second week in December, however you look at it, for Mike's holiday. We need to order it probably over the weekend or early next week. So we're at that stage. Thursday comes. I'm working away on Thursday because obviously I have other work to do other than after hours. Can't live on after hours. Don't charge for after hours. Maybe we should. Maybe that's an idea. But anyway, I digress. So I'm prepping on Thursday. In fact, I'm doing work on Thursday and I'm going into Thursday evening and I'm prepping. And major calamities hit. While I'm working in the afternoon, I decide to biggles the laptop, which may or may not have been a good idea because I started ranting. I lost the plot big time over stupid little things. Not stupid little things to me, but stupid little things to Apple that I thought made absolutely zero difference. And yet they've taken away an option that makes a massive difference to me. wouldn't make a difference to them, in my opinion, but makes a massive difference to me. So Thursday, not in the best frame of mind to start with. I think we had literally just done the show. Yeah. So we'd done Marooned. We were coming out of Marooned. And disaster struck. Huge calamity. The iMac went mental. So my iMac went absolutely crackers. And I needed to reboot. Now, at the same time as I'm doing that, there was the debacle of trying to get Biggles installed at all. Oh, that's right. I was trying to do the Biggles thing from 6 o'clock on Thursday and getting nowhere. So I also tried, while I was on the show, and I was giving you updates, wasn't I, as to how long it was saying it was going to take. So I wish they would code themselves, Jonathan. That would be a huge improvement. So I was at the stage where I think I'd given up on the Biggles thing at that point. So luckily I did have the laptop in front of me, but the iMac went absolutely mad. So I had to close everything down and try and salvage everything that I had. Reboot the thing. That was doing no good. Eventually, I said to Mike, this has gone. So we spent 5 hours fiddling with it, trying to get it back enough to do the show. So by this stage, it was midnight. I said to Mike, you need to get to bed. So I said, it's not looking like I'm going to get to do the show tomorrow, because obviously I needed prep time to put the slides together and stuff. And I can't do that while I'm trying to recover the drive. So basically, across my desk now, I have three SSDs propping up this poorly iMac. At a minimum, it needs a reboot, but it could actually be like a sort of fault. I don't know at this stage. But I've got a half terabyte SSD and a 1 terabyte SSD that I had to pull out of a cradle to get a 2 terabyte SSD. This was what we were saying last night about rummaging through these Amazon parcels to find the one that was a 2 terabyte SSD. And I ran it from that. Somehow we managed to do it. Why that was an issue was, if you image the hard drive, first off, you've got to do some jiggery pokery to be able to boot from it now with Catalina, which wasn't the case the last time I did it. And the second part was the activated software. I don't know how it works out. It's activated. On Windows, many moons ago, it used to generate a unique hardware key. And if it did that and I'm running it off a different drive, it wouldn't run at all. So we manages to get the show done. But we lost all of Thursday. So some of the stuff I wanted to have ready for last night wasn't ready. So I went without and did it on the night. So that was fine. Apart from while I'm heading up to the show with all of that calamity behind me. And Jonathan will appreciate this because I know it's happened to him. And we're not alone, Jonathan. I'm in the middle of putting my slides together. And I might put like 4 slides in on a Tuesday, not a crisis, but I might, well, I will on a Friday be putting 25 slides in 2 minutes. It's automatically saving itself. Hello, Mrs. Simon. It's automatically saving itself. And then it comes up with the infamous cannot auto save this file. You might have lost data message. Do you remember the one that did actually delete the slides and I put this whole carbon copy cloner thing in place? That. So I'd stopped dead and I looked at it and I thought, you know, sometimes if you give it a couple of minutes, it's okay. But I'm looking at it thinking, what hasn't it saved? So I couldn't tell. There's no way that I could tell. And given the time it was, 8 minutes to 9. I did not have the time to go rummaging through the backups to look for the latest thing. So I'm sat looking at this presentation, thinking, and now what do you do? And I thought, well, it's in a dirty state on my desktop. Dirty meaning it's not saved. So I thought, right, file new, copy all the slides, paste them into the new file, save the new file locally. I had already tried saving it. Doing a save as. There is a magic shortcut key that you can do a save as. Already tried that, didn't work. Wouldn't save locally either. So I thought the only thing I can do is actually run with this presentation as it is. So I did this make a new file, copy and paste all the slides in, but I couldn't close this file either. The one that with the original file wouldn't close. It wouldn't close because it couldn't be saved, and it couldn't be saved. End of. So I thought, this is a fiasco. So the air was blue. So I minimises the original presentation and I runs with a secondary one that does not have, because it's not based on the same template, it didn't have the same pages in it, master pages. So I manages to finish the presentation, manages to save it, manages to actually do the show. And after the show, I said to Mike, this is a farce. So we went back and we had a look at Keynote. It still wasn't saving it. Now, at this point, I'm like, I can't work like this. I mean, can any of you guys work like that? So with the fact the machine was hanging on with three SSDs propping it up, and the fact that Keynote had deleted half my slides and then unceremoniously told me that it couldn't save the file, where do you go from there? And I thought, well, bed would be a good idea. Just go to bed and leave it. I decided in the end I'd just leave Keynote there. So I did a bit more work, went to bed. And I'm now looking at it today in the cold light of day thinking, can I really trust Keynote? Now, I know Jonathan said it had eaten his slides. I think it happened to you fractionally before it happened to me. And I was on that course about a month ago, and there was a guy doing a presentation, and I'd seen this guy do a presentation before, and he was very good. And he starts doing this presentation and he was all over the place. And I thought, what's the matter with you? Do you not know the material or something? He was all over the place. So I'm thinking to myself how bad he was, and that he just was not how he had been in all the other sessions. He gets to the end of the presentation and he literally seemed surprised during this presentation when a particular slide turned up. It was like, oh, right. And then he talked about it. Anyway, at the end of the presentation, you could see it was Keynote. And he said, I'm sorry about that. And he went on to explain. And the short version was, he'd been working on this presentation for a while, and then he came to it half an hour before he was going to present it, and half the slides were missing. And he's no idea what happened. And I thought, I can help you there. This is his failure to save. So he said, and now it's sitting here and it says you may have lost data and I can't save the file. So knowing that I've had it four times now, and Jonathan had had it, and this guy had had it, I just think it doesn't work. So I start researching it and I find this article that's talking about this known issue. Oh, it's worse than I thought. It's not just Keynote. It's any app from the App Store that's sandboxed in any circumstance. It could even be you're saving it locally, but you don't tend to see it locally quite as much. So it gave you this workaround. So I tried it. Didn't work. Thought that'd be right. Then it gave like three alternatives. And I thought, you've forgotten the fourth, which is bin it and use PowerPoint. But I'd tried that before and it didn't end well. So I'm still at the point that I have this presentation sat on the desktop that I can't save and I can't close Keynote. So when the machine needs rebooting, then finally Keynote will probably go away. But I'm concerned, you know, if I force quit Keynote, I've no idea what will happen. So I'm at that point of like, when Mike's bottle of wine arrives tonight, I might have some and I'm teetotal. That's my tech woes. There you go. Right, let's have a look what's going on. It is a sad, sorry tale. And I know that you mean shows out of the door. We really do need to sort this Mac out, but oh, good grief. Right, how are we doing? Simon, hot, clammy and post-viral. Ooh, doesn't sound good. Prayers don't work on atheists. Jonathan, he's still with us. They could well do. Do believers all get spontaneous remission? Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You should hear the priest when he's got a cold. No, they don't. Oh, he's past saving. Oh, Mrs. Simon. Oh. I know you meant shows out the door, Tracy. Although, throwing shoes at it, there are countries they do that, don't they? Mrs. Simon thought she'd missed something. You wonder how muggles deal with these sort of issues. Well, do you know, Paul, that's exactly my thought. And this is what I've been thinking about in terms of the M1 chips. Well, you know, they're three times faster. Faster than what? They didn't say. Three times faster than what? Battery life is easier to compare. You know, I remember the days when a 17-inch MacBook Pro had 2.5 to 3 hours battery life, if you were lucky. But do you know what mitigated that? I had another battery in the bag. And you could turn it over and change the battery. Those were the days. So that wasn't a huge issue to me. You know, it was a desktop quality machine in a laptop format. And if I wanted 17 hours of battery life, because, you know, why? COVID at home. Tough sell on the battery life, but, you know, go for your life, Apple. Then I'd buy extra batteries. But you don't give me that option now. So now I'm having to buy power bricks to recharge the thing from. But I digress. I'm thinking, you know, oh, and it doesn't get hot. If it doesn't get hot, I can assure you, doing very little, in what I consider to be very little, stresses these machines out. But the other night, this one's really funny. The other night when it went, and it's like, I now need to get this back. I mean, I do backups. Literally, this thing is backing up 4 times every 15 minutes with various things that it's doing. But that's slowing it down when I'm generally trying to work with it because it's automatically doing backups. And the backup thing is the iCloud thing. So it's doing all of that. But, you know, I did actually manage to get that back up. Would a muggle? No. But what was totally bizarre was it was totally quiet. The iMac was literally silent, just like my iMacs used to be. Every iMac until this one had been completely silent unless I'm compressing video or something. And this was totally quiet. And I said to Mike, I think it's dead. And we're just looking at it, completely silent. Was it the SSDs? Is it just that it doesn't like the internal thing? I have no idea, but it was totally quiet. At the moment, it's humming along nicely, but there again, it is doing things, isn't it? But the fact that it managed last night is nothing short of amazing. But it worries me how capable these machines are. They seem to be dumbing them down, not making them more capable. So about the muggles, when iOS 13 came out, Rachel has an iPhone. I think she got a new one not that long ago, but the one she would have had then was something like an SE. And Mike and I were pondering this, you know, iOS 13 update. Oh, need to be careful. You know, we're thinking, well, we'll do a backup here and then we'll do an iMazing backup and then we'll do this and then we'll back it up to the iCloud. And Rachel came into church and was sitting in the parish centre and I think we said something about, oh, we're getting our phones ready for the update. And she said, oh, is this the new update? I said, yeah. So she said, I did that when I went to the shower this morning. And I'm like, oh, no. She doesn't know enough to be afraid. So whereas we kind of look at it, people like us will look at it and be like, oh, that might be dangerous. Got to think about that. They don't think about it. So, yeah, they do just call somebody. And then you say things like, have you got a backup? And it's like, no. And you think, well, one of them was a drive and it was an external drive. And this person said, this is my backup drive and it's not working. So I said, OK, let me have a look at it. So I look at it and I said, no, it's dead. So I said, you need to get another drive and back up the data to it. You know, pretty quickly, basically. And he said, well, but the data's on there. And I said, yeah, but you've just said that's the backup drive. So I said, what you need to do is replace this backup drive with a new backup drive and then back up the data to it. And he went, no, the data's on that drive. And he was calling this external drive his backup drive, but it was the only place the data lived. So obviously, all gone. And when Tracy says you call an IT expert, when we came, 2015, and we were waiting for Mum's funeral. We were going to Mass every week. And this lady introduced herself. And we started talking to her and everything. So we kind of knew a little bit. When this guy came up to us about 3-4 weeks later, and he said, hi, I'm Andy. I said, hello. So he said, that lady you were talking to. So I said, yeah. He said, that's my Auntie Pam. So I'm a nephew. So I said, oh, hello, Auntie Pam's nephew. So he said, believe you're great with computers. I thought, God, what's broken? And that's exactly the problem. He had a laptop that wouldn't turn on. Guess what? All the financial data on it for self-employment. Nowhere else did this exist. No invoices, nothing. Wouldn't turn on. And a backup drive that wasn't working. But it's okay because the backup drive didn't actually have any backup on from that machine. So basically, he'd got this drive on a desktop that wasn't working and he'd got a laptop that wouldn't turn on. So I said, I'd bring them in. So the following week, I get to Mass. And there is on the pew where I sit, a Tesco bag with a laptop in it and a drive in it. Yes, I resurrected both of them. I burnt all the data, put all the data onto an external drive, a third external drive, burnt the critical stuff to DVD, said the laptop's on the cusp, you know, don't rely on it, although I've got it turned on, don't rely on it, it's on the way out, and back up this data, put it in a cloud, put it somewhere, anywhere, just put it somewhere. So yeah, they just call somebody else, and they always assume... Never once is there's like a level of incredulity when you say it's dead. Oh yeah, yeah, that's okay, but can you get the data off? No, it's dead.
Dead.
And it's like, yeah, well, I'll buy a new one, but I need the data. Yeah, I know you need the data. Have I mentioned dead? Totally dead. Monty Python's parrot, dead. They just seem to think that you can wave a magic wand over it. Honest, they do. It never once enters their head that you are going to say you cannot get that data back. Never once. So we've had some tears when that's happened. A lot of the time you can get the data back. But I mean, this laptop, it was probably about 4 or 5 years old, this laptop. Hello, Pete. And it wouldn't turn on. He was quite right. There was no way it was going to turn on. You just get a feel for it. You know, when you turn it on and you're listening to it. A bit like the screeching that used to happen with a fax, you would know if it was going to connect or not. So this laptop, I thought, well, it's broken anyway. So I put it in the freezer. I wrapped it up in plastic. I had to be self... You have to seal it so there's no air gets to it. But I put it in the freezer. I put it in the freezer for about 45 minutes. And then I'm sat up here with two backup drives, one on either side of it, ready to go. I get the thing out the freezer. I get it turned on. It boots. I don't even know where the data is. And neither did they. I said, you know, where is the data? Because I'm thinking I might only have a window of 5 minutes to get this off. So with two fans on it and it literally just out of the freezer, I plug these two drives in and I go to the user folder and I start copying the user folder to both of the drives. And luckily, about 2 minutes before it gave up totally, I got the data off it. But you can't rely on that. I don't consider that a backup strategy. Just saying. Oh. That's no different from asking someone in church to service your car. There are professional services. The thing is, you know, they have such a bad name, though, Simon. You know, like the kind of little computer shop that you go past on the high street. How do you know if they're any good or not? And people are really concerned about that. They also have no clue as to what would be a reasonable price to pay for that. So they want somebody that they know. And then, I mean, there was a guy... he needed to update his virus protection, and instead of updating it through the app, he does no more than goes to Google and types in like McAfee virus, and it says like update now, and what he ended up doing was going through to a fake site and infecting his machine.
I'm sure Mummy will get you a toy.
I'll get you a toy in a minute, Lola. So his Windows PC has got a virus on it, and I'm not touching it. I am not touching it, but it comes to me. And I said, well, the best thing you can do is take it to this guy. Is it Mal or Mel? Mel's computer store or something. And that's what the guy does. He's a specialist in getting viruses off machines. So fine, let Mel do it. But, you know, the fact that I would recommend this Mel, and I recommended him to another one, didn't I? Was it Graham?
Yeah, it was grey.
Yeah, because if it's something to do with viruses or the innards of Windows, don't give it me. I can get data off dead drives, but I'm not fiddling. But if I recommend it, then they know whatever he's going to charge is a reasonable amount. So I think they like, what's that phrase? No, like and trust. They know, you know, like, well, what about what price would it be? So if he quotes me like five times that, then I know he's trying to con me. So I think that's why they do it. But yes, he got his data off. In fact, I was a bit naughty with that. Do you remember? Talking about Andy with his data. Me Auntie Pam. You know me Auntie Pam. Well, him and
Me Auntie Pam said.
Yeah, me Auntie Pam says you're good with computers. Well, the following week, so I've had it a week at this stage, and I've got it in a plastic bag, you know, and obviously I'm going to give it back to him, whether it's working or I've got the data off or not. So he comes into the parish centre and he's got his wife with him. And I've got this carrier bag full of his bits and pieces. But what he doesn't know is that the blank drive he's given me to put the data on is actually full of the data. And at the bottom of the bag, there's like a fistful of DVDs that have got permanent copies of the data. So he comes over and his wife's behind him. And you know that, like, where the wife's behind the husband saying, I told you that, Adam. Just like that. So he looked and he went, I don't suppose you've had any joy. And I went, oh, Andy, you know, it's dead. Oh, God, right, okay. And his wife's turning purple at the thought of what they're going to do with his tax thing that's due, and they've got no data. And I said, luckily, you know, as it died, I'd already backed up the data. Here you go, and gave him the bag, and she nearly collapsed with relief. They always know after. What do I use for screen recording? Camtasia or something else? Need to present via Zoom whilst sharing a keynote and using presenter's notes on a separate display. Oh, Pete, you know how to do things tricky, don't you? What's recording the screen got to do with presenting via Zoom and sharing a keynote and using presenter notes? Oh, I don't know. Right, okay. To record the screen, I use Camtasia. But that's just a personal choice, and I switched for maybe two or three features in Camtasia that were just better than ScreenFlow. But ScreenFlow is perfectly good piece of software, and where Camtasia is like not in the mood at the moment, I would use ScreenFlow. So that's my second one. So I use Camtasia. If you need to present via Zoom when you're sharing a keynote file, I'm assuming this is a keynote file as in Keynote, the application, and using the presenter notes. You can and can't do that. It depends. All right. What I do in after hours is when I go into Keynote, I can't see anything, because even if I tell it to use two monitors and not the third, it will just black out the third. So at the point that you are actually sharing, or well, presenting your presentation via Keynote, so sharing your main screen, you would not be able to see anything. But Keynote have just added in that feature where you can present to a window. So if you select that in the, what's the option? Obviously Keynote's open. We know all about that saga. Right.
It does help if people send me the right title for the song.
Yeah, that does help, doesn't
yeah.
it? Right, from the play command, you've got two options. You can play the slideshow, which is just the generic play the slideshow and we're done. And you've got play slideshow in window. If you choose to play the slideshow in a window, it literally opens up the slideshow in a window that you can move around. With it playing, you know, your arrow keys will take it forward and back when it's got the focus. Because it's in a window, you can see the whole of Zoom. You can see your attendees list, you can see your chat, you can see the whole thing. What you would need to do so they can see the slides is inside Zoom, where you say share screen, you choose this particular window of Keynote, which is the window it's presenting to, and they see that full screen and you can see everything else. That's why Apple have added it. The only caveat with that is don't close the presentation, because the second that you come out of presenter view, Zoom will stop broadcasting it because that window doesn't exist anymore. So that's the only caveat with that. How I suggested to Mike he do it, because he has that need in Zoom quite a bit, is actually to use Google Slides to present the thing, because that happens in a window. You can share that that window is a browser and it's persistent. Even if you're not actually presenting the slides, it would still be shared. So there wouldn't be any accidents of it just disappearing. And the other benefit of doing that is if you present in a window in Keynote, you can't see your speaker's notes. I know that's ludicrous and you know that's ludicrous, but Apple, less so. But Google will let you open a second window that will have your speaker's notes in. You see them, the attendees don't see them, everybody's happy. So for actually presenting via Zoom, Google Slides is probably the way. Obviously, there's a free account and it will take PowerPoint files. If your presentation is in Keynote, just export it as a PowerPoint file and then import it into Google Slides and then you can present it from there. Is that the kind of thing that you need? It's always fun with slides, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've told them my tale of woe over the machine collapsing and then Keynote deciding that, you know, let's just for giggles have that game where I delete the slides and you run around looking for them. Going to have to deal with that in a big way.
I was thinking...
Steady on.
Well, I was thinking this is the last bit of alcohol in the house, but that's not quite true.
No. It's a bottle of wine we bought as a present for a friend.
I was just going to say there's actually two bottles of wine.
Oh, is there?
Yeah. One was for a friend in February.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And the other was a friend for his 90th birthday.
Oh, yeah.
Who's no longer around.
He did make his 90th, though, didn't he?
He did.
He did.
Yes, but he didn't come to his own party.
No, he didn't, so he didn't get the present.
No.
In that case, you've got wine. And plus the fact...
The present was paid for by us.
Yes, it was.
Yes.
So, what you could do... is drink it tonight because, you know, been one of those days. And one of those
weeks.
3 days, actually. Yeah, one of those weeks. And then you could replace it because you can add it to the Asda order for tomorrow.
Yeah.
That'd work.
I've got a bottle coming tonight, allegedly.
Yeah, but Wendy might drink that on the way.
Wendy. It might not be Wendy.
It might not be Wendy. You never know.
No.
Pete says, we'll write in Google Slides and figure out the presenter notes. Will they be able to see me as well as the presentation? Yes, if you're sharing your video, yes. You wouldn't be able to do that too well. Well, you wouldn't be able to do it at all if you are taking Keynote full screen. I'm predicting quite a series of ranty blog posts.
Yes, me too.
About presentation software.
Pete. Tonight's theme is just up your street.
Oh, it is. Yeah, you'll like this one, Pete.
It's medical.
All things medical. I bet Pete's got some classics there.
We've got an anaesthetic trio. Yes.
Oh.
That's right up Pete's street.
It is, yeah. What are they? I love it when people send these things in. They're so amazing.
The age of anxiety. That's the stages of going under, awaiting the anaesthetic. It's three stages of going under, so that's the first stage, awaiting the anaesthetic. Second is King of Pain by the Police, which is going under the anaesthetic. And the third one is Comfortably Numb by Pink Floyd. That is hopefully how we feel after having the anaesthetic.
Love that. Is this John and Petrina?
It is, actually. And I thought of Sweet Dreams.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That would work, yeah.
And Down Under.
Steady on. You went to Obs and Gyney at that point.
I didn't think of that. Lily the Pink.
Oh, Novocaine for the Soul. It's just you, Simon.
Is Lily the Pink about...
Love Potion number 9 would work. Absolutely it would. Get these in the spreadsheet, mate.
Pete's not sure about Comfortably Numb. Is the audio down?
No, it's not. It's all right. He's had to restart.
All right.
No, it's not. Don't panic, Mike. Don't panic.
Of course I panic.
I know it's been that kind of week.
Yeah.
Oh, the radio station. Don't go there.
Right, we've got 25 and a half minutes. Bang on 8, I think.
Oh, I surpassed myself with that.
No, you were 2 minutes early.
Was I?
Yes. I had to bung in something extra. Bit of Jesus music at 12 o'clock.
The laugh of it is for a Catanian radio station. It's like, oh, what's on? What's on? You know, you've got like Judas Priest and AC/DC. Oh, great, great. And then Michael say, I'll just have to put some Jesus music on for half an hour. And it's like, yeah, right, I'll be back when you're finished.
I remember telling a member of the clergy, whose, I won't mention names, whose brother is a member of our circle.
I know exactly who you mean.
And do you play like religious music and things? I said, yes, we do.
Of course we do. Judas Priest. Yeah. Yes, we do. Yeah. We do lots of it.
2 points for that one.
Oh, wasn't it Jesus and the Mary Chain? That's another one, wasn't it? Yep, we play those as well.
Right, I will stick all these songs in. Yes, medicinal potion.
Oh, yes, medicinal potion.
Lily the Pink.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've just seen that in WhatsApp, Tracy. And that's why I said Lily the Pink, and then I realised it's...
How to Save a Life on Grey's Anatomy. Have you finished, John Murray?
Give her a treat.
Oh, for crying out loud, Laura. It's not like you're doing without, is it? Shall we let them choose?
No. She wants... what's it?
You've had a rodeo.
She wants a big one.
I know she wants a big one.
Dentist stick.
Right, we've got Jumbones, and we've got dentist sticks. Where have the dentist sticks gone? There's the dentist sticks.
There's only one left.
One what?
Isn't there?
One what?
Dentist stick.
In the bag?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, I thought there was.
No.
Okay.
No. Here's the dentist sticks. But if she has a dentist stick, she's going to want a Jumbone. So let's give her a Jumbone.
You had a Jumbone this morning.
Right, she had a Jumbone this morning. Do you see? I don't know you've had a Jumbone. I would have given you a Jumbone. Daddy, shut up. You're telling Mummy far too much. Right, what have we got in the way of colours? Oh, look, we've got 2 red ones. So you could have a red one, which happens to be your favourite, doesn't it? Oh,
there's a lot of people out around. There. A lot of houses out there with what I thought were Christmas decorations, Christmas lights.
Oh, they'd be Diwali. They're
Diwali, yeah. Yeah.
Come on. Right, we do pause for this one. High five. Good girl. High five. Good girl.
Although I'm not sure about the house with the little reindeers and snowflakes.
The reindeer is possibly not Diwali. just maybe
unless,
not.
Unless that's all they had in the house.
Oh, the house opposite, they're celebrating. It looks fabulous.
I said to this girl, I like your Christmas lights. She said they're for Diwali. I said, happy Diwali.
Oh, at least they don't go mad. You know when you wish somebody a happy Christmas and it's like, it's holidays. It's happy holidays. Like, no, it's Christmas. that could be a British thing. There you go. Oh, Pain by Slayer. He definitely got some here as Pete. There's dentists again, isn't there? But that's not... Is that medical?
Yeah.
From Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah, could have that.
Right, I'm now putting these away before she comes back in and wants more.
She's had a fill.
Look, I know she's had enough. You try telling her that. She's a starving dog. Starving dog. What else have we got that could be in that? Oh, I've got one, Mike, and it's one of my favourites.
Mm.
Don't Fear the Reaper. On the basis that something didn't go well. Like all my trips to hospital. Either I leg it, they kick me out because I'm ill. Like, yeah, you're ill. And you're in hospital, so they kick you out.
Well, I've got bad medicine, Bon Jovi.
Oh, good one.
Sunday Bloody Sunday.
did we mention playing like religious music that doesn't involve the Irish Divide?
The Visitors, ABBA.
Oh, nice one. That's a good one. Oh, Doctor Doctor by UFO. Oh. It was great being a med student in Leicester. The council was so... Council was tight, so the lights went off for Diwali and stayed up.
I think we've got a first cut as the deepest. I've got to go through the rest in...
Oh, I'm loving those.
An inappropriate theatre playlist.
That starts with Don't Fear the Reaper.
Yeah, but when you're under the anaesthetic, you're not going to...
Ah, well, you say that. But that if I had one case of anaesthesia awareness, I must have had 50. Usually women. I blame them, you know. Partly, some of them, honestly. You know when you're supposed to get weighed to work out, because isn't the anaesthetic per gram or pound of body weight or whatever? And they would underestimate by about a stone and then wonder why they're wide awake. Now, me, when I went in, I was actually too ill to get on the scales. So they actually asked me, and I looked at them and added a stone and a half. Didn't wake up till the following day. They're like, she's pretty dopey. Yeah, she would be. She made darn sure she was asleep. But women, they will lie about their weight. Which I did, but obviously in the right way. Because I was going down to theatre and literally they were wheeling me down there and I'm like, make sure I'm asleep. And then if a nurse came up, I'd grab her and say, oh, make sure I'm asleep. Anybody who walked past, just make sure I'm asleep. And every one of them was saying, you'll be asleep. You'll be asleep. I was asleep. Milligram per kilogram. But we're normally pretty generous. it was mainly C-sections where, not where they'd done like a local. So C-sections were probably about 70% of the cases. Other ones, there were some odd ones. Appendix. I don't know, actually. I think if it was really worse, you know, like if it was something like a heart operation, they'd probably have died. And you would never have known that they were actually aware. But it was so difficult to prove. They could feel the pain and they knew they were awake. But you actually had to tell them what the conversation was in the operating theatre before they actually believed you. They were bad cases. They were terrifying. So, yeah, because with emergency surgery, I'm presuming that you wouldn't bother weighing them, that you are making a guess. But, I mean, I'd imagine most doctors could be fairly accurate looking at somebody, what they weigh. But these women, you're thinking, don't underestimate. This is the one time, don't underestimate. But because they're in a position where I couldn't understand why the nurses didn't insist that you got on the scales. Because trusting a patient when they've got, well, men weren't as bad, but women have got a reason maybe, or they think they have, to lie, not particularly clever. Not clever, but they did it anyway. But I knew the trick and thought, yeah, that's not happening. But you should have seen me. Well, what time was it? I think it was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I was the first one after lunch. And I think I vaguely remember coming round, probably about two, three hours later. I have a vague recollection of like, yeah, she's alive. And I don't remember anything else till the Saturday morning. That's how bad it was. I remember my mum and dad visiting. They brought my aunt with them. And it was Friday night. It was Friday afternoon. That was bad, wasn't it? Don't have a Friday afternoon op. But it was an emergency. So I remember them being there. But it was just like I opened my eyes. And it's like, yeah. And off I went again until Saturday. So I don't remember much about Friday. But I am pleased to report, Pete, I was asleep. I did not feel a thing. Not for 3 weeks did I feel a thing. Oh, dear. Simon told everyone about the anaesthesiist taking me to count down from 30 and then randomly shouting 22 mid-operation. I remember as a kid, you know, they used to use like a mask with like green something at the bottom of it. And count back from 10 and I'm like, oh, I'm going to get to one. 10, 9... gone. That I really did. You use different drugs and reduce the doses, as the problem is they can drop the blood pressure if you overdose them. I don't know what my blood pressure is. It's normally normalish when it's taken. Now, my mother, on the other hand, only had to be told 3 weeks before they might take her blood pressure, and it was sky high. Her blood pressure normally was over 200. So it'd be something like 210 over 130. That was normal for her. And when she went somewhere for the first time, they took it. It's like, oh my God, she's dead. Like, no, that's normal for my mother. And I don't know whether it was like she got herself wound up the minute they put the cuff on her. But honestly, I don't know how she managed that. So what I used to do you remember that one they put on me? I'm like trying to be the opposite of my mum. So it's like, well, do you want to take your blood pressure? I'm like, oh God, get into, you know, zombie mode. And I'm like literally trying to shut down. So they pop this thing on your finger. It was a finger one. And she said, it's not registering. And I thought, oh dear, I've gone too zombie. I need to come out of it a bit. Well, I said, maybe we should try another one. So she tried another one and that was just as bad. And I thought, I need to giddy myself up a bit here. So I said, maybe we should try it on you. You need to wake up a bit. And she tried it on her and she said, no, it's absolutely fine. And I thought, less zombie. Just trying to calm it down. I know it's terrifyingly high, Pete, but that was normal for her. It's like temperatures that can vary. I know not to the tune of like 50 degrees, but with her, I think partly it was stress. She was very bad because she'd had blood pressure like that since she was a child. I think since she was about 16, 17. The first time it was measured, it was like, oh my God, you're dead. And then every time it was done, it was similar. It did go higher than that when she had a stroke, but that was base rate for her. So they wanted to give her pills to bring it down, but every time she had the pills to bring it down, she'd just pass out. So she had to stop taking them. Well, she decided she was stopping taking them, and she lived to a ripe old age. She lived to 80. And I don't think at 80 she'd seen a doctor in 20 years, if not more. She didn't deem there was much point. When she was really ill, I wouldn't like to say what was wrong because she never got any treatment, but she decided that she needed to see a doctor. And if she decided she needed to see a doctor, she was ill. And she went along, went in, told him the problem, which was a symptom that is a recognisable symptom that would at least need investigation. I wouldn't actually have thought he could say, oh, yes, that's X. She would have needed to refer her for some tests. And he said to her, go home and take a paracetamol and stop moaning. She didn't go back. This is why we were very, very careful which doctor we had. So we've got a good one now. She leaves us alone. We leave her alone. None of these letters anymore, thank God. You know, the ones about you need to go and have this test and that test and all the rest of it. Yeah, we came to a deal with those. Stop sending them because I'm not going. So save the stamp. Oxygen level. No, this was some sort of meter and it was blood pressure she was doing. So maybe she had a cuff on me at the same time. I don't know. Because I've done the oxygen level thing. We actually have one of those. Because when the doctor turned up, the GP, with my mum, he didn't have one. And when he rang for the ambulance and said, you know, she needs seeing right now. I don't know if he actually knew what was wrong with her, but he knew she needed looking at. They asked for the stats and he said, I'm sorry, I haven't got a meter with me. So I opened the drawer next to my mum and put, said, is this what you're looking for? And he went, oh, yeah. And we'd bought it for my dad because he kept having hypoxic incidents. Well, they never got to the bottom of that either. He died before they found out what it was. But he would just go kind of catatonic. He'd be in a chair. Luckily, he was in a chair. Thank God he wasn't stood up. He was in a chair. And my mum had said, he'd said something about having something to eat. So she took him something in on a tray. And she'd given him like a spoon. So he picks the spoon up for whatever it is. And she disappears back into the kitchen. Ah, Diwali. Diwali fireworks. And they are from the house opposite. And they look rather pretty. Right. Hopefully they won't go on all night. So where was I? Yeah, she'd gone back into the kitchen. And she then came up to me and said, can you come down and have a look at your dad? And I said, why? What's the matter? So she said, I don't know. He's not talking to me. And I thought, well, that's not unusual. So I goes downstairs and I takes one look at him. And he had the spoon in his hand. And he was sat up. He hadn't collapsed. He was conscious. His eyes were open. But he couldn't respond. And you're moving your hand in front of his face. There was just nothing. Nothing. And I'm looking at him and I thought maybe he's had a stroke because his mouth looked like slightly twisted. And I thought he could have had a stroke here. And he's not responding anyway. So I had to get on and get the ambulance there. Got them there. They dealt with that the first time. About 3 weeks later, two, 3 weeks later.
Yeah.
It happened again. Only this time was worse. It was dinner time. So it wasn't an early in the day thing. And again, she'd got some food for him and he said he didn't want much. But again, she said, you stay there, you know, don't be running around. I'll put it on a tray. So she takes the tray in. He picks up the knife and fork. So he had a knife and fork in both hands at this stage. And she went back into the kitchen. I'm downstairs. I goes in to see him. Mike's out with the dog. And I goes in to you know, say hi to him. And I looked, I thought he's gone again. And he's just totally unresponsive. But with the knife and fork in his hand and the food on a tray. So I grabbed the food out of the way. I prized the knife and fork out of his hand. And I shouted to Mike, because he went past the door, you know, I need you now. And he said, I need to go upstairs and wash my hands. I've just been out with the dog. So I said, I've not got time for that. Just get in here. And he comes in and he sees the state of him. And he says, oh, right. So we rang the ambulance again. And I thought the advice was absolutely ridiculous. Get him on the floor and put him in the recovery position. He was nearly 6 foot. And I thought, if there was only my mum there, how is she supposed to get him on the floor and put him in the recovery position? So I'm holding the phone while Mike's got, did you have the feet and I had the head, yeah, or the other way around?
No, I had the feet.
We did manage to get him on the floor. But, you know, it took two of us. And I said to mum, you'll have to talk to them while I move him. And then the third time, it was, and when they rolled up, they'd no idea what was wrong with him. The third time they pitched up, that was even more of a fiasco. That was even more. But I'm on the phone to her and she said, is he breathing? I said, yes. Are you sure? I wish you could have heard his breathing. It sounded like water bubbling through a pipe. So there I am trying to clamber over at everybody that's in there, because by this stage your carer's there. And I said, yes, have a listen. Hold it down. Oh, his breathing doesn't sound good. I thought, no, this is because he's got pneumonia. So if you could possibly send somebody. He'd caught pneumonia when he went in hospital. He went in. He had cancer, obviously, but he wasn't actually that bad with it. He was all the other issues, but he wasn't actually that bad with cancer. But they decided to keep him in. And the next minute they decided to send him home because he'd caught pneumonia. He didn't recover from the pneumonia. But it was a bad experience in that just how much they expect you as the family to do. If my mum had have rung, if she'd have been on her own, and she'd have rung and they'd have said, get him on the floor in the recovery position, she'd have had a heart attack herself, thinking she was letting him down by not being able to do it. But how on earth is a woman of 5'1", weighing about a third of what he did, supposed to get him off the chair carefully enough not to damage him and put him in the recovery position? Utterly ridiculous. She didn't even ask me if there was anybody there. It was just, well, put him in the recovery position, as though, what am I, a qualified nurse? I don't have good experiences. I don't, Pete. So I assume everybody else is the same. But maybe everybody else has a much better experience. Our Tracy's father-in-law used to have catatonic. Yeah, it's hard to explain. They put a monitor on him, a kind of monitor that goes over the heart, and it's strapped on, and you're supposed to have it on all the time, even in the shower. So whatever one of those is, Pete, they did put one of those on. And he had that on for nearly 2 weeks and went back. They took it off. They looked at all the details and said they couldn't tell anything from that either. So they never really got to the bottom of this, just because he's not out of it. You know what I mean? His eyes are open. It's the weirdest thing. And you're thinking, you know, because the other thing was he was deaf in one ear and not 100% in the other. So, of course, you're thinking to yourself, can he actually hear me? And you're screaming at the top of your lungs just in case he's like not 100% aware. But, you know, if you shouted loud enough, maybe he would hear you. And it's really stressful. But the extent of what they expected you to be able to do, I thought was quite shocking. I mean, I know if somebody's choking, obviously they don't want you to wait 20 minutes. But he was quite comfortable in the chair. He was causing nobody any problems. He was breathing. And he, you know, if you'd have looked at him, you'd have thought he's fine. But he's just not responding to you. So there's something not right. I can understand, you know, putting him in a position. But he was fine where he was. If he'd have fallen over, fair enough. But he hadn't. So I only wish I had a video to share with you, because it must have looked a complete fiasco with us two. And mum didn't want to talk to them on the phone. She'd had such bad time with anything medical. She didn't want to talk to them. So when we had to ring 999, it's like, can you ring them? Because I can't do it. And they actually said at one point, the doctor said, ring for an ambulance. So I rang for an ambulance. And because he'd been in the week before and they didn't know what it was, they said, don't ring again. And I thought, but it's happened again. What am I supposed to do? So that was when she decided, whatever happened, we weren't ringing them. But then on the day he died, we were quite happy to just sit there and wait, because what else could you do? And they decided that they wanted then to take him in, which was when the biggest fiasco of all happened. We could have done with you, Pete, with a helicopter. We actually had the first responder on a bike. Then somebody turned up in a car and he had a mate with him. And then an ambulance turned up. And I think there were three of them with that. We had three carers in the house. The doctor and the district nurse, you couldn't move. It was like a party. Good job it's not happening now. It'd be more than six. You wouldn't be allowed in. It was a complete farce. He'd suddenly turn into a statue, totally rigid. Vice like grip on a chair or a worktop. No, my dad didn't do that. He was literally just as if he was sat in the chair, looking downwards, so his head kind of went down. But he hadn't collapsed in terms of, like, if you're in a chair and you, like, lose all tension in your body, you would fall over, and he didn't do that. And I was able to get, like, the things that whatever he had in his hands, which was a knife, a fork and a spoon on different occasions and a newspaper, you know, I was quite easily able to take it out of his hand. But it was just really weird, really weird. It was like somebody who was dead that you knew wasn't dead, which if you're not medical would be a bit concerning. Pete'd be fine with it, wouldn't you, Pete? But particularly if it's a relative and you've no idea what's going on and you've asked them what's going on and they've no idea. I guess it's like being an expert with a computer. What I needed was a Pete. That was what I needed. But what I got, unfortunately, no. Oh, and then when he was really bad, you'll love this, Pete. The biggest thing they did, all they were talking about was he'd had a mark on his neck. It wasn't a tumour or anything. It was just like a mark on his neck. It was fairly big, like a birthmark. Probably about 50 pence piece, something like that. And he's got cancer and he's got whatever this thing is that keeps putting him in his catatonic state. And it was, well, I think we'll do plastic surgery on his neck. And I looked at Mum and she looked at me like, is this really important? And they did. They did plastic surgery on his neck.
3 minutes.
Okay. They couldn't get a plaster to stick on it when they'd done it. It kept coming off. And that was their biggest concern. Obviously, that was not our biggest concern, but that was their biggest concern. What a fiasco. But luckily we can look back on it. He'd had a great life and it was peaceful in the end by the time they got him to the hospital. Right, what are we playing first then, Mike? Because I've got no idea and I'm going in to create
I'm so excited, the Pointer Sisters.
Oh, sister, nice, like
as in
that.
Ward Sister.
Oh, do you remember when they had Ward Sisters? I got an injection from a ward sister once, and apparently...
In fact, it's a trio, so make sure you got that lined up. It's my trio.
Okay. This ward sister never did injections, but she decided to do mine. Thank you for that. She was way out of practice. Hurt like hell.
I've also got Ring My Bell, Anita Ward, and that's a double pointer.
Is it? Oh, yeah. Ward.
Ward. Yeah. And you ring the bell for attention when you're a patient.
You won't get any, but feel free. What's happening here? Right, so what was the first one?
I'm so excited, the Pointer Sisters.
I'm so excited.
Not the Tracy version.
Right, there we go. Oh, no, not the Tracy version. Not our Tracy.
Not our Tracy.
The other Tracy. No, right, I've got I'm so excited.
1:30.
Right. Okay, right, give me the next one.
Sisters are doing it for themselves.
My mother would have loved that one for this. Is this
Eurythmics?
That's not what it's saying there. Let's stick it in. I got to work out mixes and all kinds of stuff, but I don't see the Eurythmics.
It's in there. A minute to go.
Right, got it. Okay, so I need to turn that block on down there, don't I? Oh, this will be fun. I'm not sure what the Jesus was in aid of, Pete, but if it was what happened to us, I totally appreciate that.
40.
Ferradura. Oh, I shall have to have a look for that, Tracy. Right, we're going to do an out on here so we can do an in on Brooklyn. So, for the moment, it is good night from me.
And it's good night from me.
And we'll both see you next time.